buses in your area are getting better. They are getting more and more reliable. So most of the time when we say your bus will arrive, it will arrive. You could say they are running like clockwork. So come on, London, it's time to get back on the bus. Search TFL Journey Planner.
Greetings and welcome to the Boxing Esquire Podcast. Welcome to the Boxing Esquire Podcast. It's definitely been a minute, so I decided to give a special treat this time, a double dip. We have the great New York promoter, Mr. Lou DiBella, and the great New Jersey promoter, Kathy Duva, main events as a double dip this time. We talked about all that's going on with both DiBella Entertainment and Main Events. A lot of great fights they're putting on. Lou's got fighters in the World Boxing Super Series and at Madison Square Garden soon. Kathy has fighters in Atlantic City, in Brooklyn, coming up on ESPN, all kinds of different networks. So great conversations with both, and I hope you enjoy. All right, so I want to welcome to the Boxing Esquire podcast the one and only, the head honcho at one of the top promotional entities in the sport, DiBella Entertainment, Mr. Lou DiBella. What's going on, Lou?
Everything's good, Kurt.
Cool.
On my way to Boston to watch Tevin Farmer hopefully successfully defend his title against James Tennyson on Saturday night.
Yeah, man, you have an absolutely crazy schedule the next couple of weeks. On Saturday, you've got Tevin Farmer and Tennyson, who's a very tough customer, European champ. How do you think that one's going to go?
I mean, I'm never going to tell you that I'm not confident in my guy. By the way, I wouldn't tell you if I wasn't confident. I still wouldn't tell you. Tevin's a really good boxer. So, I mean, he's got tremendous skill set, and I think he should be the best Tevin Farmer that he's been in a couple of years, because now he's, like, a little bit removed from the shooting in his hand. He's, a year and a half away from that. So I think you're going to see him at 100%. Tennyson's a big puncher, very big puncher, but, you know, Tevin just has to be careful. His speed and athleticism is superior to Tennyson's. The only thing Tennyson has on Tevin is punching power. I would say if you were a betting man, it would probably be Farmer by decision. But whenever you fight a puncher, it's a little bit dangerous.
Right. Tennyson was down in his last fight. I mean, he got dropped, and he was losing that fight to Martin Ward, but then he just kept coming, and he's got that great equalizer. So, and that was going to be on DAZN, right?
That's on DAZN, yeah.
Okay. How'd that deal come about with you and Eddie? Is Eddie co-promoting, or is Tevin just appearing on DAZN?
It's co-promotional for a few fights. Co-promotional for a year and a half or so. But he's my co-promoter for at least the next, Saturday night, two more fights on DAZN. And it could go, if Eddie delivers something big enough on DAZN, it could be a four-fight deal. But it's a multi-fight deal, and the way it came about was Eddie approached me with a very aggressive kind of offer. He had a game plan that he wanted to execute with Tevin and lead to a potentially, major fight in two or three fights. And the money was top of the market. So, Tevin's been around the game a while and hasn't been treated so great by boxing. He hasn't really made significant money before. Saturday night will be his first multi six-figure payday. We were able to make a great deal. Obviously, DAZN needs to attract people. DAZN needs people to learn its name. It doesn't have any brand recognition. It just went out and made a deal with Canelo Alvarez. It's going after championship caliber talent, some of which through Eddie Hearn, and some of which, obviously they just made a deal with Golden Boy and and Canelo, but, you know, they're looking to make a name for themselves. And I'm operating in the best interest of my fighters. So if I'm offered a game plan and money that I can't match elsewhere, I'll do business with Eddie and DAZN. I'll do business with ESPN and Top Rank. I'll do business, and I do a lot of business with Al and PBC. I'm doing business right now with everybody, actively doing business right now with everybody.
Yeah, actually, you're probably the biggest promoter out there who's unattached right now. So you're actually in a pretty good position as a free agent with, you know, three very well-funded television networks who are, you know, actively looking for opponents and good fights. So, you know, where you fit in.
Yeah, I mean, no, and look, I also get the opportunity to promote a number of great shows with PBC and a number of great shows at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn.
Right, which you've grown.
I promoted a show with Aram. I'm co-promoting some stuff with Eddie. I'm open to doing, look, it's a pretty good position to be in right now. And here's the other thing. I really, truly have no reason to root for anything but the success of the entire industry, because for two reasons. One is, right now I'm doing business with a lot of other people, and you know, the more they are valuing talent and the more they're paying for content, the better off I am. And the second reason is, I am one of the biggest guys in the world right now who's not attached to a network.
Absolutely.
And that's not the worst place to be for my fighters or for myself. You know, because it's not a leap to see another player coming in, you know, and particularly if the players that are in now start having success or continue to ratchet up the valuation of our content and our sport, boxing. You know, obviously content is king right now, and combat sports is a key component in the view of a lot of programming and content providers as a nice category. So, you know, I'm rooting for the success of, and here's another thing. To some extent, these guys are absolutely my competitors, but they're also, you know, right now ESPN's not my competitor. It's still a network. I mean, Aram's got the deal there, but ESPN, particularly linear ESPN, you know, delivers a lot of eyeballs, you know. I continue to do business with Showtime, and Showtime right now is the last man standing, starting in 2019 in premium cable boxing, dependent on what happens with Stars after the contender, you know. But I'm going to keep my options open to do business with everybody. You know, Combustible Lou is now Lou Switzerland.
I love it. I love it. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, yeah, I kind of wanted to get to the state of the game stuff
I have relationships with people. Obviously, you know, I've done more business in recent years with Al and with the PBC universe than any place else. And if, you know, if that continues, I'm thrilled with that. You know, there's a lot of big fights that could happen there. You know, Showtime is going to have a big slate of PBC fights. Fox is now in the PBC business, and a lot of eyeballs are going to occur on that, you know, that part of the universe. And there's going to be some, you know, pay-per-view offerings that come through, you know, that side of the industry. And that, I keep saying that side, but right now there appear to be deals between certain, content providers and platforms. Obviously, Eddie and Golden Boy have deals with the DAZN platform. Aram has a deal with the ESPN platform. Heyman right now has a deal with Showtime and with Fox. I don't believe that those platforms are going to be the last platforms.
Right.
You know, I've heard that Kathy Duvas, some number of dates that she's going to announce on NBC. The more stuff that's out there, the greater success the sport has across the board, the better it is economically for all of us involved in it, from the fighters to the managers to the promoters. Right now, the way the universe is situated, it's not the easiest thing for the smaller promoter to succeed unless he has a local market that he can capitalize on a regular basis.
Well, especially so in New York with the insurance being driven up by that bill a few years ago. It makes it really, really tough on small promoters to do club shows, which is like the lifeblood of boxing. But I did want to get to your other fighters and your busy schedule because, you know, you got, you know, a lot of your star players fighting in the next couple of weekends.
Well, thanks to my friend Eddie, but it's really not his fault because HBO sort of called his hand on this. But the HBO show, which has a terrific main event between Danny Jacobs and Sergey Derevyanchenko, one of the really Derevyanchenko is one of the best fighters in the world that's not as well known as he should be. But here's his opportunity, and I think he's in a toss-up kind of fight with Danny Jacobs at the Hulu Theater at Madison Square Garden on the 27th. I have on the same card Yandale Evans from Cleveland that was involved in two terrific fights in the last couple of years. He beat undefeated Bilal Dib, knocked Bilal Dib off a really trajectory toward a title shot. And then he went on and he defeated the late Louis Rosa in what was rest Louis' soul.
Right.
He died in a car accident subsequent to the fight. But he defeated Louis Rosa, gave Louis his first defeat in what was an honorable mention on a lot of pound-for-pound lists.
It was a great fight.
So it was a great fight. And he's fighting Machado on the undercard. And Heather Hardy and Shelley Vincent, too, this time for a WBO World Championship rematch at 216's Female Ring Magazine Fight of the Year. That's also on that card at the Hulu Theater. And at exactly the same time, in New Orleans, Louisiana, Ivan Baranchuk is going to fight Anthony Yigit for the IBF 140-pound title. And in the main event, Regis Progray is fighting former world champion Terry Flanagan for Regis's WBC Diamond Belt. And Flanagan's former world champion himself. So,
well, first of all, where are you going to be? Which one are you going to?
I'm trying to figure that out as we speak.
It's a tough one. Yeah. Well, hey, you know what?
Let's try to figure that out as we speak. Obviously, physically, I could only be in one place.
Right. Exactly.
But I'm gonna try to figure that out. On top of it, I got my mom having some surgery next week. So, anybody out there who believes in saying a prayer, throw up one for her.
Absolutely.
She has a surgery early next week, so I'm going to have a really crazy week. And then I have a major press conference in Richmond for my minor league baseball team on Tuesday because we're hosting the Eastern League AA All-Star game in Richmond, Virginia. And the Richmond Flying Squirrels are my AA team, San Francisco Giants AA team.
Right.
In Richmond, and we're hosting the All-Star game, so we're announcing our title sponsor on Tuesday. So
congrats on that.
I got a crazy week next week, really, truly crazy week. But I'm really rooting for what I think could be a great week for my fighters and for the Bella Entertainment.
Absolutely. Let's touch on the fight just a little bit. Baranchuk, you know, obviously I know him well. You co-promote him with Fight Promotions Inc. But he's also a Broadway boxing alum. He came up through the Bella Entertainment development system. He went Broadway boxing, then show box, and now he's getting a world title fight on the World Boxing Super Series.
Yeah, look, I'm grateful for Espinoza and Gordy Hall, the architect of show box, for giving me some regularity of dates, and I've been able to use Broadway boxing as a feeder system to show box, and then on to bigger things. And both Regis and Baranchuk were fighting in New Orleans at the UNO Lakefront Arena on October 27th, and people in New Orleans and that whole, New Orleans, Louisiana, Mississippi area, come out to UNO Lakefront Arena on the 27th and watch. But both those guys came up through that, that Broadway boxing showbox feeding ground, and now both of them are fighting for world championships on the same night. That Baranchuk, I think, is a harder puncher than Yigit. I think his offense is a lot scarier than Yigit's. I think Yigit's a very good boxer, very skilled, mobile, somewhat elusive, but not a powerful guy.
Right.
I think I got a pretty good chance in that fight.
I agree.
And I expect to take care of business with Flanagan, but look, Terry Flanagan's a tough customer, and anyone who doesn't think so isn't paying attention.
Yeah, absolutely. He came real close to taking the BO title. He lost a split decision. So, yeah, and, you know, Regis got hit a little bit more than people expected in his last fight. So, that you know, I think people are definitely looking forward to that one as being a tight one that Ruguru should win. But Flanagan, definitely no joke. Are those guys in the same bracket in the World Boxing Super Series? Would they meet in the semis or no?
Baranchuk?
And Progre.
I don't believe they're slated where they would fight next. I don't think they would fight next.
Okay, so Baranchuk would take on Taylor then, if Taylor wins and he wins. Okay.
I believe Baranchuk would take on Taylor, and Regis takes on, Relic.
Relic, yeah.
Yeah, Baranchuk would fight Taylor, and Regis would fight Relic. Relic beat Trojanovski already.
Right.
So Regis would fight Trello. And Ivan would fight. We're assuming it's Taylor, but, you know, Taylor's got to fight with Ryan Martin. Taylor's going to fight Ryan Martin, assuming Taylor, if Taylor wins, Regis would fight Relic, and Baranchuk, if he beats Yigit, would fight the winner of Taylor and Ryan Martin.
Damn, those are good fights, man. Those are really good fights. I mean, I love the World Boxing Super Series, man. I'm so glad that you put your guys in that tournament. I mean, talk about that a little bit.
It's now a worldwide television market, you know? And maybe now with Canelo moving to DAZN, there'll be some more eyeballs driven over to DAZN to watch the Super Series, which is really good content, you know?
Absolutely.
But I got to tell you that they anteed up DAZN and bought the Super Series. The Super Series anteed up and is paying top dollar and keeping the participants very active. So there's, you know, three fights in a concentrated period of time, which is great for the fighter. And I'm excited that Regis is part of it. And it's going to be a crazy night. God willing, Tevin Farmer gets past his counterpart from Belfast, Mr. Tennyson, this Saturday night at the TD Garden in Boston. And then I got a crazy night with six fighters and five world title fights in two cities at the same time.
That's just...
I have Yandale Evans and Derevyanchenko fighting for world championships in New York on HBO with Heather Hardy fighting Shelley Vincent on HBO in an historic fight for HBO.
Those are two of your fighters, too.
Right, both of them are my fighters, and they're fighting for the vacant WBO title. By the way, Cindy Serrano on DAZN this Saturday night on the same show that Andrade's fighting on and that Tevin's fighting Tennyson. Cindy Serrano's jumping two weight classes. Some people think she's crazy. Her sister's done this kind of thing many times, but look, Cindy has never had the opportunity for a major female boxing payday, and she's moving up two weight classes, gave up her belt at 126 to fight at 135 to challenge Katie Taylor. So Cindy's fighting Katie Taylor Saturday night. She's obviously an underdog, but it shows you the kind of grit that Cindy has to at this late stage in her career take on that kind of challenge and jump two weight classes. She's on the televised DAZN show, streamed DAZN show, and you can get that with the DAZN app. And Tevin's on the same card. And then HBO, you know, and then a week later, Derevyanchenko, Jacobs, Machado, Evans, Heather Hardy, and Shelley on HBO, and the same exact night back on DAZN, the World Boxing Super Series, best 40-pounder in the world, Regis Progre against former world champion Terry Flanagan, and Ivan Baranchuk, the Beast, who I co-promote with Tony Holden at Fight Promotions. He's fighting Anthony Yigit for the IBF, the vacant IBF title, and to move on in the World Boxing Super Series. So the 20th and 27th, I got a very busy and important week, you know, a very important week.
Absolutely. So yeah, let's pull it back and talk about what you were talking about initially, kind of the state of the sport. I know you spoke about this briefly on another podcast, but I mean, your name was synonymous with HBO boxing and you know, when you were there, and it had to be disheartening to hear them announce that 2018 is their last year. What was your reaction when you first heard the news?
It was not unexpected, but it was disheartening, and the timing of it was sort of a little bit sooner than I would have guessed it would have been. Look, I had a lot to do with, you know, with a team of people, Seth Abraham and, you know, Michael Fuchs, Ross Greenberg, Bob Greenway, Rick Bernstein, a whole, I go through a long list of late Artie Curry, Mark Taffet. I go through a long list of people that had a lot to do with the rise of HBO boxing and HBO sports, in the 90s, particularly. And then to watch the once biggest brand in the entire world in televised boxing get out of the sport. It bummed me out. But you know what? Shit happens. And life changes. Companies change. The priorities of businesses and networks change. Clearly, boxing hasn't been a major priority to HBO for a while as a programming entity. When I was there, boxing was viewed as must-see programming. That changed. And I think HBO, once it started to view boxing as being less significant, eventually it became a self-fulfilling prophecy. And then when the time was right, they made the decision to get out. Stuff like that happens in corporations and television networks a lot. It's just when you look at the fact HBO had 40 years at the very top of the boxing industry, in terms of televised and premium, you know, cable and premium cable, HBO is the king of boxing. It's an historic changing of guards and a historic passing of a franchise.
Yeah, it's definitely sad. I mean, you know, I think, you know, everyone has great memories of just so many amazing fights through the 80s and 90s and early 2000s and, you know, up to the present day. But it's interesting, too. Now you hear Bob Arum especially and kind of Eddie parroting it a little bit that, you know, they're trying to shoo Showtime out of the boxing business.
You know what? Honestly, like... come on, Bob is being Bob, and I have a tremendous respect for Bob, but Bob's being Bob, and I think Eddie's being a British parrot. HBO didn't have to get out of boxing.
Right.
AT&T didn't have to get out of boxing. I mean, AT&T, AT&T can buy and sell the zone a million times over. If AT&T wanted to be in boxing and HBO wanted to be in boxing, they'd still be in boxing. Showtime's having success with boxing.
Right.
Their subscribership in terms of, you know, the contentment with Showtime Sports right now, that's being evidenced by Showtime subscribers and you know, the significance of the Showtime boxing franchise to Showtime. They don't have to get out of boxing. I mean, you know, they may have to approach it a little differently than they have in certain circumstances, but there's absolutely a place for premium cable in boxing if they want to stay, if they're dedicated to that type of programming and they want to be in our combat sport. I don't think there's any reason to think that Showtime won't be a significant player for at least years to come.
Yeah, I hope to hell they don't get out of it, because I thought that upfront that Steven did at the beginning of the year was amazing. I thought that's something that's been long overdue in the sport, you know, where you're actually marketing the sport and educating people about, you know, the demographics of the sport. that it's, you know, young people watch this sport, you know, and it's got, you know, a better, like, you know, cross representation in its demographic than most sports do. You know, it's great that Steven got out front and talked about those things and educated people, and then also brought out like a ton of great fighters and put together great fights. I thought Showtime's had maybe their best year ever this year.
I agree with that, and I think there's no reason for them to abandon something that's working for them right now. HBO abandoned something that stopped working for them. Now, you could argue that they have anything to do with it not working for them anymore. They may very well have, but once it wasn't working for them, they made a decision to get out of it. You know, right now, boxing's working for Showtime.
Right, right. Speaking of big deals and business, Canelo and Golden Boy going to DAZN. I mean, they were kind of, you know, with HBO shutting its doors, they were out there. Are you surprised? And how significant is it that they went to DAZN as opposed to Showtime or ESPN or Fox?
I don't think it's overly significant. DAZN had a big war chest and needed to get some anchor. They don't really have an anchor right now, and it's a streaming service that's a sports streaming service, and there aren't a lot of sports right now that are, you know, major team sports that are out there for the having, for the taking. And I think that they made a decision to use Canelo as like a loss leader and grab somebody that might be really able to get attention as he's gotten the last few days and maybe get some people to download that app. So it's not shocking to me. They had money, you know, they've been bragging about the money they had. They opened the doors up beyond Eddie. So it's no longer, you know, DAZN's not Eddie's thing alone. Obviously, Golden Boy now has a home at DAZN for some of their other shows and for Canelo. But what they have done is bought a pay-per-view star onto a service that desperately needs an identity and name recognition and a brand. So I get it. I understand what they did, and you're not going to hear me criticizing it.
Right. I guess, you know, that it's kind of like a blessing and you know, I guess you can make like both sides of the argument. I mean, you know, pay-per-view is something that boxing fans chafe at.
Pay-per-view is not going the way. This may serve to help the pay-per-view industry evolve.
Right.
You know, I think that 50-50 deals with the cable industry where the programmer is getting, you know, after he pays the distribution partner or whatever, often gets less than half the money. That's not going to fly in the future.
Right.
If Floyd Mayweather comes out of retirement, he's not doing a 50-50 deal with anybody on pay-per-view.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think you might see if the percentages shift, then that can also bring down the suggested retail price. So you could see the suggested retail price coming down. But DAZN didn't kill pay-per-view by getting Canelo Alvarez. But I do think that there will be some, you know, look, we're in a period of flux and a period of change, and we're going to see certain things change, and we're going to see, but you're not going to see, you know, all these, like, I've never heard more bullshit than I've heard and read in recent months. And by the way, the bullshit changed on a biweekly basis as things have changed and developed. Heyman was dead. Right. Well, Heyman's far from dead. And then, you know, there was a Showtime deal and a big Fox deal. Heyman's dead. You know, ESPN's not going to last a couple of years. Well, no, yes, it will. You know, Eddie was going to be the king of all boxing, and boxing was going to cower at his feet, and everybody else was dead. That hasn't happened. But DAZN's the player.
Right.
You know,
right.
They got to deal with Anthony Joshua, and they got to deal with Canelo. They're a player. So they're going to be around for some period of time. And I fully expect other programming platforms to get into boxing and to make plays in sports and in combat sports. And this is not like because boxing's hotter than it's ever been. Like, people thinking that way are really not thinking through everything. But boxing is affordable content.
Right.
In a world where a lot of different people and entities need attractive content, relevant content, sports content, combat content, and you know, there's a marketplace. I got to jump in a couple of minutes because I'm about to cut you off. I'm about to head into a bad area, Kurt.
Okay.
But if you want to wrap it up with a last question, we can do that.
Okay, sure. So I guess, you know, so there you have it. I mean, we've got like, you know, all this broadcast money coming into the sport. You've got three or four networks with exclusive deals and major entities. You know, we've named them.
But streaming, here's the big obstacle for streaming, okay? And streaming's here probably to stay, okay? But the big obstacle is, you know, eventually too, we're going to be self-driving cars, and there'll be regular trips into the Earth's atmosphere, space, and there won't be traditional television networks. But none of that stuff's happening tomorrow.
Right.
And for the foreseeable future, linear television, an ESPN basic cable, a Showtime premium cable, a Fox network, are going to deliver more eyeballs than streaming services will. Versus distribution, and that could be a number of years. So the challenge with the DAZN is how to build a brand out of something. Look, ESPN has the advantage. ESPN Plus has the ESPN brand. ESPN's
right.
brand is one of the most famous sports brands in the world. Most people don't know the other platform, the other streaming platform. They have to establish their name. I guess that, you know, they tried to make some steps in that direction this week.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, now, I mean, because you have these three power bases, how are the best going to fight the best, and how is it going to be?
I think that's going to be a problem.
Right.
Look. In certain areas, it's not going to be a problem at all. If most of the best in a particular weight class lie in one place, I mean, you can get a lot of great PBC welterweight fights right now. The question is, when does the guy that emerges as the one guy out of PBC? When does the one guy, when he's the last man standing at 47, when he's the last man standing, can a Bud Crawford fight be made? And the other question is, who does Bud Crawford fight between now and then? Top Rank's going to have to build some opposition and build some storylines. You know, there are fighters. They have to be developed. It's one of the reasons why there are going to be opportunities for promoters that aren't part of the big three. I also expect whatever that big three is going to have competition in the future because other players are going to come into the industry.
Right, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Lou, well, I'll let you go. I mean, I know you've got Tevin to take care of and you're driving right now. So I appreciate your time, man.
Well, I'm a passenger right now, greatly disturbing my driver. I'm watching my phone as I'm losing the little, what do you call those things? Those, the bars. I'm down to two bars. So I want to end the interview on a high note and gracefully before I cut out. But root for Regis Prograis. Root for Ivan Barinchak.
All right, I mean, really good.
We need a good upset in boxing. Sergey Derevyanchenko's hungry. He deserves it. Root for Sergey Derevyanchenko.
Absolutely. Well, hey, good luck
Support
in the next.
Women's boxing.
Absolutely.
Marty Vincent. Hulu Theater at Madison Square Garden. HBO, October 27th. UNO Lakefront Arena, Regis Prograis, October 27th. They're competing with each other thanks to Matchroom Boxing and Eddie Hearn. But hey, you know what? You know what? The more activity we have in the sport, there are going to be nights where there are multiple shows in one night. And frankly, maybe that's a good thing because it says that a lot's going on in our industry and our sport. And clearly right now, if you look at the last couple of weeks, a lot is going on in our industry and our sport.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, if you had more time, I would have got into. I just wrote an article about how boxing should form a league, and every, you know, we should do like 5-6 World Boxing Super Series a year and rotate the divisions. But I don't know if your bars are going to hold.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck with that one. All right, buddy.
All right, my man. We'll talk to you.
Really enjoyed that conversation with Lou DiBella. And next up is the extraordinary promoter from New Jersey and main events, Ms. Kathy Duva.
So joining me on the podcast, one of the smartest people in the business, one of the best promoters without question, Kathy Duva from main events. Welcome to the Boxing Esquire podcast, Kathy.
Thank you so much, Kurt.
Man, just crazy times going on in boxing right now. Really fast-moving times. I just kind of wanted to talk to someone with who had the most institutional knowledge that I know to try and make some sense of it. But first, I want to talk about what's going on with Main Events. So you've got the big show coming up November 3rd. At the Aviator in Brooklyn with Sullivan Barrera and Shawnee Monahan.
Yes.
Is that one going to be part of the Facebook series that you guys?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It's going to be the they made a commitment to like first five fights, so this will be the fifth of those fights, and then after that we'll find out how they feel about going forward. Very important.
Absolutely. Yeah, I thought I saw a quote on the most reliable source, of course, Twitter. one of the I think Sean Nam, boxing reporter, talked to someone from Facebook, and they said they were pretty excited about boxing, and they definitely want to stay more involved. So, it just seems like everything's opened up right now. I mean, that's something that Main Events is looking at.
Of course, my God, and boxing's hot again. This is amazing. It hasn't been like this since the beginning, when I first got involved in this business, TV-wise in the early 80s, when boxing was on every network and, every weekend there were multiple shows. We're starting to see something that looks a bit like that again. It's wonderful.
Absolutely. What do you think was the cause of the renaissance of boxing of late?
Well, every medium that has ever been invented, beginning with radio, started out with boxing first. We go from radio to broadcast television to cable to premium cable to pay-per-view, closed circuit. Everything that has been developed is a way to communicate with people. Boxing was always the first sport on, and there's a reason for that. We own our own rights. So we're cheap compared to major league franchise sports. We are easy to schedule. You can fit us in, wherever you need us. And people will watch it if it's on. And so my daughter calls it the law and order of sports. It's not your favorite show, but you'll watch it if it's on. And that's kind of what boxing is. Very few people will say boxing is their favorite sport, but it's surprising how many will say, yeah, but if it's on, I watch it. So every time we have a new medium that's looking for a way to reach out to sports fans, they come to us. So now we're in the world of streaming and over the top, and those kinds of platforms are going to be driven by audiences who are either willing to watch something just because they find it somewhat interesting, or are really dedicated, these niche audiences of people that just have to see all of it, and we qualify on both of those descriptions. So it kind of it situates this sport very uniquely as something that a broadcaster can take a chance on without really taking that much of a chance. We always were able to get eyeballs, and the reason we kind of declined on the network television side was partly because HBO had stepped in and taken all of the cream of the crop, basically all the best events away, because they had more money to spend, and also because we were not sponsor friendly. Sponsors buy time. Boxing matches can end very early. Sponsors are sensitive sometimes about things, and I can't tell you how many meetings I went to even in the 90s hearing, well, Mike Tyson, Don King, I don't know if we really want to be associated with that. The nice thing about this over-the-top world or the streaming world is it's not driven by sponsors.
Right.
It's driven by people and what they want to see, and that gives us an opportunity to come back and become a meaningful sport again. Prior to the advent of we call it, ESPN, the modern world of television sports, boxing was one of the major sports. It was boxing, baseball, and horse racing, and part of the reason why boxing was a major sport is, again, because people will watch it if it's on. So,
right.
We, we weren't on for a long time, and that was the problem. Now we're back. So I think this is terrific. It's a great time to be involved in boxing. It's a really great time to be a premium fighter. There's so much money being offered for their services right now through all these competing services that are ultimately aiming at this streaming world, which is where they're headed.
Right. You know, it's really interesting because, yeah, I talked to Lou DiBella last night, and I was talking to him about, you know, you have like a lot of the you know, bigger promoters have their own network or their own television deal now, you know, on what, like four different networks now. And Lou, I thought, you know, like Lou and basically, you know, Main Events are two of, you know, the bigger companies that don't have their own. And, you know, I know you guys are looking, and it's been reported that you're talking to people. So, you know, that probably won't be for long. But yeah. Lou's kind of like enjoying being like a free agent, you know, and being able to kind of match his, you know, being that guy who deals with all of the networks and kind of picks and chooses. Is that something, I mean, I know you guys are looking at, you know, your own deal, which makes obviously a lot of sense. But, you know, is there a consideration for maybe, you know, staying a free agent and being that one that all these other ones have to reach out to?
I think in the end we're going to have it both ways. If I get my way, you know, I am working on something, and hopefully we will have an announcement that I can't really talk about yet, but hopefully we'll have an announcement in the next week or two. But that deal will not preclude me from doing other things. So what I hope to do is build Stars, as Main Events has done since the 1980s, actually the late 70s, as we always have. And once they become big enough, we will have the freedom to go to everyone. We just made a deal with Top Rank for Sergey Kovalev to fight on ESPN. We, you know, certainly will listen to whether it's Eddie Hearn or Golden Boy at DAZN, and you know, whatever else comes along. Again, Facebook is interested. We'll be in a really nice position to be able to go to wherever the best opportunity lies. And you know, I'm happy that we have continued to be able to work with those promoters. Most recently, working with Golden Boy on this Facebook series, working with Top Rank. With the Kovalev fight coming up, so we've been having good conversations with them. And also, you know, I've known Eddie Hearn's father for, I don't know, 30-odd years. So we're all friends, and the door's always open there, too.
I mean, that's great. Absolutely. I remember, yeah, when I was a lot more active as a manager, and, you know, the most attractive thing, I mean, you know, Main Events literally had deals with every single network that televised boxing, you know, yes, ESPN, Showtime, HBO, you know, just NBC. You know, you guys have dealt with everybody. You know, you have just great relationships with you know, all the broadcast networks, and now Facebook as well. So, yeah, you know,
yeah,
just,
and a lot of the people, surprising number of people we are dealing with now, are the exact same people we met, you know, 38, 40 years ago.
Right. 80s,
90s. So the advantages
90s.
Of being really old.
Well, speaking of that, you know, November 24th, you have Dmitry Bivol and Jean Pascal on HBO, which, you know, had been pretty much the premier network for 40 plus years in the sport. Mm-hmm. Is that officially the last HBO boxing show in at least the near future?
I don't think so. I think they're planning another one on December 8th. But we'll be close. We'll be close to closing the show.
Right.
It's a world without HBO in it is something I've never experienced in boxing. So that is going to be quite an adjustment for me. It's funny, though, you know, a friend of mine at NBC continues to tell the story about how my husband called him up one day and said we had done the first Vinny Pazienza Greg Haugen fight on NBC, and we were planning the rematch, and he called up this friend at NBC who's still there And he said, so how much you want to pay for this rematch? And he said, I don't know, a couple hundred thousand maybe. And he said, yeah, this guy Seth Abraham just offered me $1 million for it. And my friend said to him, well, then I guess that's the end of boxing on network TV. He said it that day.
Wow.
It's over. And that person has been saying consistently for years, as long as boxing's at HBO, you're never going to see it come back to network TV in any meaningful way. And look what just happened. So, it really, at this moment, as streaming is suddenly becoming the new thing, you know, when we were starting out, it was cable that had just, you know, ESPN launched in 1980. Our company was incorporated in 1978. So as we did that, my husband, Dan, of course, you know, talked about how this is going to be the future. It's cable, and this is how it's going to work. Well, 2 years ago, his daughter, my daughter Nicole, sat down and said, this streaming is going to be the future. This is how it's going to work.
Wow, yeah.
And so I see history repeating itself. So I'm really, we were actually, you know, one of the first four promoters that put fights on ESPN in that first year of series, boxing series that they did. We worked with Top Rank in that, and Russell Peltz and Ernie Terrell. We were the four promoters that put on, you know, alternated weeks in that first series that ESPN did. So how crazy, we're back on ESPN, we're working with Bob Arum. We see this future coming, you know, and now that even the ESPN thing is being driven largely by their over-the-top plans, their streaming plans, and the sport just somehow, you know, just keeps going because, again, people will watch. So it's fun.
Absolutely. Well, you know, only if you put, the Kovalev-Alvarez rematch at Ice World in Totowa, New Jersey, would you have completed the circle.
No. That's true. That's, unfortunately, it's a clothing store now.
Oh, is that right?
We're going to do any more fights there. We'll have to let the, I don't know where they're going to put it, Frisco, Texas or someplace. Top Rank still hasn't told me, but it's going to be... whatever. It's going to be great, and more people will see it than saw the first fight, most likely. So that's exciting.
Yeah, it's great. You know, it's funny. I read the, I've probably quoted this article a million times, but from the Sports Business Journal where Burke Magnus from ESPN was basically saying, you know, even though they didn't offer the PBC a deal, the PBC, you know, by putting things on the network and you know, not consistently, but you know, they definitely hit some really big ratings when they had really good fights on, and you know, the light bulb kind of went off, and you know, network executives said, like, wow, this sport can still draw ratings, you know, and the demographic is nowhere near what we thought it was. It's young people, it's across the board, you know, it's wow,
sure,
it's a product, you know, right in front of our face, and we just kind of, you know, blew it off.
Times I've had, over the last 20 years I've been in network offices and talked to the executives and said, you know, like at the time, like my son, who is now about to be, is 29, you know, when he was 16, I remember going in, you know, to meet with ESPN and saying, you know, Arturo Gatti just fought Leonard Durin on HBO and my son was there who was 16 and he didn't say much about it when it was exciting. It was a knockout. Everybody was
great
thrilled.
Knockout, yeah.
You know, we went to the coffee shop after, and we were talking about all kinds of things, but not that much about the fight. And then I picked him up from football practice on Monday, and he wanted to talk about it all of a sudden. I said, well, what the heck happened? He goes, are you kidding me? He goes, I saw that highlight on ESPN. Must have been 9 times. I said, you know, if you put this on ESPN, young boys will get interested.
Right.
My kid wasn't interested when he was in the room, and then he saw it on TV, and suddenly it was, oh, my God, this is exciting. Oh, my God, I was there. Let's talk about Arturo Gatti. And I'm like, you've known him your whole life. And he's like, yeah, but he was on ESPN. This is, you know, this is important. And
right.
And it was the challenge was convincing them that if you put this on and you put some marketing behind it, you put up enough money to enable us to make an interesting fight because it costs money.
Right.
You know, you'll get the viewers. And finally, you know, and again, it's not just that it got through. Being sponsor supported is really a problem for a sport like boxing that can end at any moment. I can't stress that enough.
Right.
When a sponsor comes in and buys a football game, they know exactly how long the broadcast is going to last, right down to the second. They know exactly how many spots they're going to get. They're going to know where they're going to be placed. They're going to have some sort of metric to measure how effective it was. When you put a fight on that could end in one round, you have the, and it's happened. It happened. I know Mike Tyson fought on Fox years ago, and he blew somebody away, and they all went, "Wow, we had a huge audience that was with us for 3 minutes." That's not something to support with advertisers.
Right.
In the beginning, back when we talk about the early 80s, the 70s, the 60s, Why World of Sports was on every Saturday, and Sports World was on NBC, and Sports Spectacular was on CBS, and those fights were folded into those shows most of the time.
Right. They could roll to something else. Right.
Yeah. If what the fight did was it brought the audience, always
right.
brought the audience.
Right.
But they weren't going to sponsors saying, "Hey, buy boxing." They were saying, "Hey, buy Wide World of Sports." Well, that was a lot easier sell.
Right.
And again, you're right. If the fight ended, we were watching, skiing from Sam Moritz or whatever.
Right. Barrel jumping from Minnesota. Yeah, something to fill the time.
ESPN
right.
came along and started buying that stuff and putting it on their network at 2 o'clock in the morning. And no longer were they selling those rights to ABC and CBS and NBC. And so those anthology shows went away. That's when boxing went away. And then at the same time, HBO started scooping up the rights to the best events because they had more money. They were subscriber supported. They didn't have to worry about how long the fight lasted. They were in a perfect position to capitalize on the demise of the anthology shows that basically started to drive down the rights fees for boxing matches. So now we come up with another perfect storm where all kinds of things are coming together at the same time, just like they did then to benefit HBO. Now they're coming together in a way that all of these brands, NBC, CBS, Fox, ABC, they're all figuring out how they're going to how they're going to stay relevant in the future. And of course, they have to get into streaming. They want to aggregate whatever it is we all end up watching on streaming services. They're all going to be competing to do that. And so this is part of their plan. This is part of their strategy. And we fit beautifully into it.
Right.
I just hope, we get to stay. Because what ended up happening eventually is as the franchise sports became more and more expensive, we got pushed out.
Right.
And, the nice thing, again, about streaming is sponsors are buying eyeballs. They're not buying an event. And so if you'll watch it,
right.
the sponsor's happy.
Right.
They don't decide what you get to see anymore. They just place themselves wherever you happen to go. And that... At that point, a sport like ours that has an extremely loyal fan base really does get to move the needle.
So, yeah, I was looking. Yeah, it seems like Top Rank is now, starting to get like real, or different sponsors than boxing programming had previously, on ESPN, mm-hmm. like Friday Night Fights and so on. They're getting like more mainstream kind of products, and that's a really, really encouraging sign. For boxing that, I remember, watching it on those anthology series, you saw car commercials, you saw, even mm-hmm. banks and, investment firms, you saw big money, being poured into the advertisements.
Sure. Well,
so.
Because they were buying Wide World of Sports.
Right.
They
right.
weren't buying boxing. Very rarely did they say, yes, I want a boxing series. It right. happened. But they were those tended to be lower level events. The big fights ended up on those anthology shows.
Right. Well, I guess now too, people, adding in the streaming element, programming itself, like television shows, Netflix, if you want to watch a television show now, you can just go to Netflix and like binge on it, right? But live sporting events are something that, you tend not to, you want to watch them live, you want to. You can't just go back and watch them. If you already know who won, you're probably not going to go back and watch it. So I guess that's the value that the networks are also seeing in boxing, is that it is a live sporting event, and it's relatively cheap mm-hmm. compared to the major sports, right?
Well, but again, there were, for years are being cheap, actually.
You get pushed out. Yeah, you're not a priority, yeah. right? Right.
We weren't a priority, exactly. And I don't know that we're quite to the place where I'd call us a priority yet, but But we've proven that the younger generation will watch it. It is not, you know, unlike horse racing that has not been able to really, you know, capture the younger generation's imagination. Boxing, in the end, will have been helped by MMA because it proved that young people like to see combat sports. And I've always said for years that every MMA fan is just a boxing fan who doesn't know it yet. because when they see a real fight, and by a real fight, I mean a good one. I'm sorry, an MMA match cannot compare, and that's just a fact. So we're winning them over one by one, and you know they come to the big events, the Big Ten events, they come to the big pay per views. Now we have the opportunity to drive them to the slightly the next level down. We don't have to worry that they have an HBO subscription now. They are, you know, people that can just watch regular TV, and that this is a little good, you know. And to the extent that it ends up on an over the top service like ESPN's, you know, young people are going to be interested in that, not just for the boxing but for other sports. And you know, look. Not only do we drive people to the live events, but we're probably the only sporting property that people will watch 20 years later, 30 years later, a week later.
Right.
You know, you don't sit around watching all football games, but lots of people sit around watching all fights. So, again, on a streaming service that needs a lot of product, someone like Top Rank or Main Events that has an enormous videotape library is in a very good position. So it's really good for us. We're really happy.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, you guys have, you know, just a ton of amazing fights, you know, and have had, you know, amazing fighters and are developing some amazing fighters. I wanted to talk a little bit about some of your younger fighters. Well, actually, you know what? I had a question. I looked on the undercard of Bivol Pascal and who's scheduled to be on there. And I was wondering if Main Events is involved with like Sergey Kuzmin, or I mean, I'm going to butcher these names. was it Muradjan Akhmedalayev, Shakram Giasov, Evgeny Tishenko?
Those fighters are with World of Boxing. We are partnering with them on this event, and because we partner with them on B-Ball, and because Main Events has happily a few shows coming up in the next few months, we really didn't need the spot, so World of Boxing is taking advantage of that to display their fighters. Hopefully we'll work with some of them going forward, but that is not, you know, by any means established. We are, however, continuing to work with them on Dmitry Bivol, who is, I believe, the future of the light heavyweight division, so we're very happy about that. He's a really nice young man and such a pleasure to work with, and we hope we have a long and successful relationship with him and our friends at World of Boxing.
Absolutely. I mean, he's you know, the future of the light heavyweight division. I think everyone can kind of see that. He's definitely a very dynamic. I mean, he's like one of those unique fighters where he's a world champion, yet he's still a prospect. You know, yep. He's still growing as a fighter.
Well, that's, you know, that's kind of what interests me about, you know, in the end, pairing him up with a guy like Jean Pascal. You know, Dimitri's, you know, not had that many fights. And I don't know that he's ever been in the ring with someone who is going to say absolutely anything and do absolutely anything. And that is part of what you have to learn to cope with.
Right.
And better here than in, you know, the biggest fight you ever fight. And so, you know, which I assume will come later in his career. But this is an interesting test for him in a way that is just different from the tests he's had before. And I think it's really cool.
Yeah.
Jean is a warrior, and he is a guy who gives you know, 100% every time he gets in the ring, and you know he's not going to disappoint you, and he is going to make Dimitri earn it. If Dimitri wins this fight, it's going to be because he fought hard and he earned it, and he's going to learn a lot in the process. So this is how we watch a great fighter develop.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A tough former champ, definitely going to test him. Let me ask you about a few other. I mean, the one prospect that you guys have who I really like, and again, I will butcher this name, but is it Miriam Nursultanova? Miriam Nursultanova.
Miriam.
Yes.
Yes. Miriam Nursultanova.
Nursultanova. Okay.
Not as hard to look. Miriam Nursultanova.
But
he is from Kazakhstan, and he is quite talented, and we are very excited about him. He's going to be a force in the he's fighting a junior middleweight right now. I don't know if he'll stay there. He's a young man, but he is definitely one to watch, no doubt.
Absolutely. Definitely. And Mirtzalayev, is that right?
Bakram Mirtzalayev.
Yes. Mirtzalayev.
He is from Grozny in Russia, and another you know, talented young guy. They both fought last week in Las Vegas.
Right.
They both won, and they will both be fighting again very soon, and in December. And they are both. I put it. It's interesting to them too. They are light years ahead of where most fighters are at their stage, you know,
right.
when they've got, you know, less than 10 fights or whatever, roughly 10 fights. And they're going to be expected to step up to fight much tougher opposition, the kind of opposition most guys wait to 20 fights to get to. But because these guys from Eastern Europe are coming and their careers are so accelerated, because they are so talented, they have such great amateur backgrounds that they have, you know, amazing basic skills. But the thing they don't learn in the amateurs is how to break somebody down, how to finish somebody. So we're watching them learn this before our eyes, and you know, you see them the other night, Bakram, you know, he knocked down Noe Gonzalez, and he tried and tried and was not able to finish him. Well, it's because he doesn't know how yet.
Right.
Clearly had the ability to do it, but this is part of learning, and this is, you know, what he's going to focus more on in the gym going forward. And we're going to see a progression of their careers that's just a little different. We saw the same thing, I think, with a great fighter, Vasyl Lomachenko, you know, who took on a world champion in his second pro fight and lost, and then, you know, came back. But during that fight, you watched him learning and getting better until
the end absolutely.
Of the fight. You know, he was dominating, but it's just that he was too far behind at that point. Well, we've watched him over the course of five or ten fights, get better and learn. And now he does know how to break somebody down. He does know how to finish somebody. And now he is, you know, I think unbeatable. So I think with Bakram and Marim, you've got two guys that maybe, you know, have very similar trajectory to their careers. You're going to see suddenly at some point, you know, around 15 fights or wherever it comes, they're just going to step up into a place that nobody's going to be able to touch them.
I agree. I think you have some dynamite prospects there. Those guys are definitely the next. And you know, the obviously you're you know, planning to the deal we can't talk about. so we'll see. I mean, I'm excited to see those guys develop. I think you definitely have two or three really amazing prospects.
Oh yeah. Well, and guys like LaShawn Rodriguez and Cassius Chaney and you know, a little closer to home, Ismael Villarreal, who I think is really going to be something special. You know, he's coming along very nicely. You know, all guys, you know, Ismael and LaShawn, both from New York. Frank Alarza, who we're working with now.
Great guy. I love Frank.
Now, he's a guy who, like, you know, somebody put him in a fight he shouldn't have been in. And it just derailed him. And, you know, he's got such potential. He is a character. He's charismatic. He's got everything.
Yes.
He's exciting. Hopefully there are going to be some really great opportunities coming up for him really soon. You know, we've also got Matty Araskayev from Kazakhstan, who's another terrific young fighter who he's just a boss. He's just such a fun guy. And again, when we have the opportunity to let people get to know him, they're going to love him. and on. We just signed Dennis Duglin. He's going to be with us, and he is another guy who just got derailed because somebody put him in the wrong fight. And he's exciting and brings a big crowd, and all that stuff's important. It's a lot more fun watching a fight when everybody in the room is excited about it. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, he upset my man. I mean, Vaughn Alexander. I remember when I was working with Kevin Cunningham with Corey Spinks, and I remember him sending me a tape of Vaughn and Devin in the, you know, as 15-year-olds at the Silver Gloves, just annihilating people. So, I was surprised
he stepped up and he did it. He was a big underdog and he proved himself. So, We're just going to keep looking for, you know, our sweet spot at Main Events has always been finding people who Jolene calls them the abused children, who maybe didn't do as well somewhere else as they might do here, and rehabbing their careers and bringing them back, or finding the people, God love him, Sergey Kovalev, who nobody wanted.
Right.
Nobody wanted him.
Mm.
We have a good eye here. Jolene and I both took one look at him in that first fight and went, holy crap, sign this guy before somebody else does. And we're going, well, everybody turned him down? What on earth were they thinking? But it was, you know what they were thinking? Oh, he's Russian. He won't be worth anything. I had people say that to me. So we reject that kind of thinking here.
Right. Yeah, you know.
I believe is a star is a star. And if you are one and I have a platform, I will get the chance to display him and build him, make the system work for him, turn him into something, you know, that the fans want to see. If I look at him fighting and I want to see more, then I have to assume others will. So that's kind of what we base our decisions on, rather than pedigree or, you know, what their record is, or I'm not, you know, what their nationality is or whatever like that. That to me is meaningless. So it's worked for us for 40 years, and we're going to hope it keeps working for us for another 40 years. We'll see.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, what, there's, speaking of, you know, Eastern European fighters, Main Events fighters, What is going on with Zar Glaskov? Is he recovered? Is he ever going to fight again? What's going on? I know he really messed up his knee in a Charles Martin fight, but I haven't really heard from him since.
Yeah, well, what we learned after the Charles Martin fight was he really messed up his knee a long time before that, and it just had, he basically hit it from everyone. This guy learned how to walk without limping when he was in incredible pain, and so he was able to hide it. You know, people, when he walked away from the ring that night, there were people who thought he had faked his injury. He had a torn meniscus. He had a torn ACL. He had a dislocation of his knee. I don't know how he made it back to the locker room without crutches, but he walked. So this is to give you an idea of how tough that guy is.
Right.
he walked without a limp back to that locker room, and when the doctor looked at it, you know, when they opened it up, when they did the X-rays and went and looked at it, they were like, "Oh my God, he's lucky he didn't lose his leg because of the dislocation." So he is at the moment. He's gotten a job down in Florida, driving a truck. His wife has a good job. They seem to be very happy. You know, I don't know that he plans to come back. He knows he's got a home here if he does. But the more important thing is that this guy, you know, is able to walk and has a job and has a family and is living the American dream. So, you know, they, what can I say? He would have won that fight. He would have fought Joshua. He would have made a whole lot more money, but it wasn't meant to be. So. What can you say?
Yeah, it's a very tough break. Really, really tough
it
break.
It really was.
Yeah.
If he ever feels ready to come back, we're, you know, he'll be welcome with open arms, but he, at this point, has not indicated that he is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I guess the last thing I kind of wanted to ask you, and, you know, as someone who has so much experience in the business and has been through, you know, any number of different Cold Wars and whatever, you know, between King and Arum, King and Main Events, and, you know, PBC and Arum.
Arum
and Main Events. Well, generally you get along with Bob, right? But I mean, I'm sure, yeah.
Oh, there were moments.
Right.
He said in a meeting a couple weeks ago, in the history of Main Events and Top Rank, there's never been a problem. I go, okay, Bob, let's not get carried away. There were a few problems. When my husband was involved, oh, my God. There were moments when they were, oh, my God. But people, you know, those weren't quite as famous, I guess, but they were just as intense, I promise you. There were moments, I mean, there were times when we sued Top Rank and won, by the way, a couple of times, that, you know, those were the days, but we've managed to make up and get along just fine now. So we like everybody there. Carl Moretti, who was with us for,
of course,
you know,
yeah,
20 plus years, is there now. We get along fine with all the nice people that work at Top Rank. It's a great group of people to work with, so we're happy we're all on the same side right now. Good.
Cool. But I mean, you've got, you know, you've got PBC, who's on Fox and Showtime. You have Top Rank, and I guess now Frank Warren is on the ESPN Plus ship. You've got Eddie Hearn, Golden Boy, and the World Boxing Super Series on DAZN. You know, you've had your fighters on, you know, every network that has televised boxing. How, you know, I mean, obviously for the fans, they don't care what promoter's on what network. They want to see the best fight the best. I mean, how do you combat the silo problem? How do you keep these guys from counter-programming each other and the fans kind of away from the sport? You know, how do you solve that?
Well, from our perspective, the plan is to, when we have something to talk about where it'll be, is to put on fights where people are evenly matched. There are a lot of fights that don't get made. Especially when you have people fighting over seven-figure rights fees. You know, you get the elite fighters. You know, when you think about it, you very much more rarely get a fight between two elite fighters where you can't guess who's going to win.
Right.
Or at least make a good educated guess. There are a lot of fights at the lower level that between fighters who maybe have a loss on their record, or a few losses on the record. The best example I will ever come up with for that was Gaddy Ward.
Right.
A fight would never get made today. Nowhere. Mm. There's no platform on which that fight would get made today. In fact, recently HBO has admitted to me they would never buy that fight now.
Mm.
It does not fit their criteria. My God, Mickey Ward was never a world champion. Arturo was well past being one. It was a 10-rounder. It wasn't for any kind of world title. They both had multiple losses on their record. Those guys would have never gotten the opportunity to fight each other.
Right.
And look at Mickey Ward became a legend out of that series. A guy who never won a world title, despite what the movie says. So, how many Gaddy Wards are out there? You know, if you think about it, you had two guys who were at the end of their careers. It was considered to be a farewell fight for Gaddy from HBO. It's like they were throwing you a bone because you went in and he got in with Oscar De La Hoya and took the tough fight that he probably didn't have to take.
Well, I remember like the fight after De La Hoya against my guy. I remember Kerry Davis going out at the press conference to Teron Millett when he fought Teron Millett. You know, it was you know, Kerry's out there basically saying thanks for the memories. You know, I mean they expected like Millett to beat Gaddy and that would be it.
Yes, I remember negotiating with Kerry after Gaddy lost to Ward and going in there to negotiate the rematch and ultimately, you know. Turned out to be a very long multi-fight deal for him, and Kerry kept going, but this is ridiculous. He's a club fighter. Why are we paying so much money for him? Why are we paying so much money for a club fighter? And thank God Ross Greenberg could see. And we kept asking for more money. He just kept giving it to us because it was great television.
Right.
You don't need the best fighter in the world to create great television. Neither one of them could have beaten the best fighter in the world.
Right.
Gaddy got in the ring with the best fighter in the world a couple of times, and it was painful to watch.
Yeah.
But boy, it was incredible to watch him against people at his level.
Right.
And there are lots of fights like that never get made.
Mm.
And there's no platform for them. There's no money for them. There's no appetite for them. So what I see when everybody's fighting over seven-figure rights fee fighters, the absolute cream of the crop elite, I'm really happy to be in that conversation with Sergey Kovalev, of course. But what I see is a huge opportunity that everybody else is passing. Because even if a great fight happens on an undercard, nobody ever became a star fighting on an undercard.
Right.
Nobody. In fact, the proof of that is Julio Cesar Chavez, who fought on Mike Tyson's undercards way under the radar for years. And then one day they, for whatever reason, decided to put him in the main event and found out he was a superstar. You have to be in the main event to get that kind of attention. And we are going into a period now in New Jersey where I'm going to try very hard to continue working with this the advent of gambling on fights, on sports.
Right.
That is revitalizing this place, which is, again, where we got our start. And if you make a really evenly matched fight, then the sports book is going to do better than if you make a mismatch.
Right.
And I think that there is a you know, something to be said for just, if you can throw away this idea that we need a name or we need a world title or we need an elite fighter and just get down into, let's make a great fight. That's easy in a weird way because there are so many great fights that don't get made.
True.
So we're gonna try to give people the opportunity to revitalize their careers. We're going to try to give them the opportunity to step up. You know, again, if you, go look at Ray Leonard's career and look at the people he fought on the way up, or Pernell Whitaker or Evander Holyfield or whatever. They weren't all superstars. They were fighting older, faded fighters because they learn a lot fighting those people.
Right.
You don't learn a lot when you match two 10-0 guys with each other. Neither one of them has anything to teach the other.
Right.
And so that model, which I know, you know, there are those who like it, and you do clearly going to get some good fights out of that. I think the matchmaking skill comes more into play when you say, well, let me take this older guy, give him another shot. Let me take this young guy. Let's test him and see how this turns out. Because in the end, the young guy's going to learn something, whether he wins or loses. And the older guy may get another bite at the apple, the same way Mickey Ward did. So I think there's wonderful stories to tell in that kind of a scenario. And I see huge opportunity to be able to do that. And that's going to be what we focus on.
Excellent, excellent. I asked one last question. What do you think of the World Boxing Super Series, and would main events put their fighters in the World Boxing Super Series?
You know what? The opportunity arose, and it made sense, of course. You know, you have a there's a whole big world out there. It's not just in the United States, and this Super Series seems to be taking place mostly in other places, but it's wonderful that you know, these other parts of the world are that into it. And you know, I've known the Sauerlands for, you know, almost as long as we've been in boxing again.
Right,
working
right.
First with their father, but
sure.
I get along great with them. And if there was a, you know, an opportunity to do that, of course.
Right. Because you guys, you have, like, it seems like you have, you know, like a couple divisions where your fighters are collected. You've got the, you know, three of the top 10 light heavyweights and mm-hmm. three great prospects around or more than that, around junior middleweight and middleweight. So just be interesting. But Kathy, I really, really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me on a Friday. And best of luck with the deal that we can't talk about. And hope everything works out.
Me too.
All right, take care,
Kathy. We'll be talking again real soon.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you, Kathy. Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that will do it for another edition of the Boxing Esquire podcast. I'd like to thank Lou DiBella and Kathy Duva for taking time out to speak with me. If you like the podcast, please leave a comment or a rating on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or wherever you access the Boxing Esquire podcast. I'd really appreciate it. It helps new listeners find the podcast. And I'd really like to thank David Duenas and Gabe Montoya for welcoming me onto the Leave It in the Ring network of podcasts. I really enjoy all of David and Gabe's podcasts, as well as Evan Rutkowski's Fistionados podcast, which is an amazing podcast. I really enjoy it. It's an honor and a privilege to be on this network. So until next time, so long, everybody.
London. There's 8.5 million of us, all in a hurry to get somewhere. To work, school pickup, or a first date. Hey, who knows? This time it could be the one. So why can't we be more considerate of each other and help everyone get there on time? By keeping your cool with other road users, helping others off the train when they feel ill, and folding your buggy to let wheelchairs on the bus. Because we think you'll agree, London's better when we travel kind. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.